This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen, alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on 104.1 FM KMOX. So, as you know, because we've been shoving it down your throat all week, we are now on FM, which essentially probably doubles our listenership. So I got together with the guys about 2 weeks ago and let them know what was going on and said, we need to up our game. We need to add more benchmarks and more weekly guests and just basically try harder, which everyone needs to do in their life, in their professional life. And so to that end, we have added a new weekly guest. Her name is Lindsay Mastis, and she joins us now. Lindsay, it's a pleasure. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And you are, I'm just going to call you an expert. I don't know if you call yourself one or not, but an expert on AI, which we are fascinated by, especially Rachel Zimmerman is always doing AI stories. So we're glad to have you aboard and part of the team. Thanks.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, AI excites me as well.
And you're a St. Louis girl, right?
I am. I grew up in St. Louis, and I was assuming you're going to ask me what high school I went to.
Let me guess.
Lindbergh.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
You had it written down.
I was going Kirkwood.
Oh, okay.
I was going Kirkwood.
Nice. All right. Neighbors. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So I grew up in St. Louis and then, you know, got into journalism and traveled the world. So I'm in Washington, D.C. today.
How did you get into this discipline?
So you know what? This goes back to like middle school. In fact, Mr. Reinecker, if he's listening right now, I think he just retired like a year ago. He taught social studies and he had asked the class about, probably about World War II and about whether the Holocaust could happen again. And the kids are like, no, it couldn't. And I was like, actually, there's a war going on right now in Albania. And I'm part Albanian. I'm mostly Greek. And so I had this binder I was keeping, brought it to school with me the next day to show the kids like, hey, you know, the stuff's still going on. And I just wanted to be like, see, I told you so. Mm. Instead, they looked at this. I heard gasps and they turned around and said, what can we do to help? And I didn't really know, but I knew in that moment that if I could just inform people about what's going on, then the right people could step up and make the world a better place.
Jeez, when I was in fifth grade, I was trying not to pick my nose. You are very impressive. My gosh.
I didn't expect that question right off the bat. I'm like, oh, this is kind of heavy.
No, it's interesting. And so what do you do for a living now? Like, what is your job and how is it tied to AI?
Yeah, so I have spent 20 years in traditional broadcast news, and over the last few years, I have made artificial intelligence and emerging technology like my official beat.
Yeah.
And I've always brought technology to any newsroom that I've worked in. I even went to Iraq at one point and trained like 100 journalists in digital journalism and social media. So I've had a passion for this. And come January, as it happens in TV news, everything's contract-based. My contract was coming up and I'm like, you know, I really want to do this full time. And there's not a lot of places that are like, yes, do this full time. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to hire myself and I'm going to do AI and tech and I'm going to really focus on it. So I've got my YouTube channel and I also am doing like some consulting work and talking to different companies about AI and then also doing like big speeches. Nice. So that'll be coming as well. But yeah, I was like, you know, how do I do this full time? Well, I'll just hire me.
Good for you. I did that once, but I didn't end up firing me. So yeah, I did not live up to the hype. I'm a good interviewer, but that was it. So AI, as far as I know, probably goes back much farther, but goes back as long as I go back. You know, I mean, I'm 60 years old now, and I remember as a kid, you know, Space Odyssey, 2001 A Space Odyssey, and HAL 5000, and Star Trek, and all these sorts of things. But when, Lindsay, did it get real? Like, how many years has it been since we're like, oh, wait a second, this science fiction stuff is actually happening?
Right. Well, so I think for a lot of people, it really came to life when ChatGPT was launched. And that's something that in the AI space, experts and people that live and breathe this and have been living and breathing this for decades, they all talk about that being the pivotal moment. I mean, I remember over 10 years, no, was it 15 years ago, I was doing stories on augmented reality. I was excited about it. I had a really hard time getting everyone else as excited about it as I was. So there was really this shift over the past couple of years. And I really believe that the reason is because ChatGPT and what OpenAI did was make it accessible to the masses and make it in such a way that we're not as intimidated as we have been with everything else. We don't have to be a tech expert to use it. We can just log on, ask it a question, and then go from there.
Yeah, I am not very techy at all. And about a month ago, I played with ChatGPT for the first time. And interestingly, I asked it very serious personal life questions. And I was beyond impressed. I was creeped out. I've been in therapy for 20 years, and this did as much for me as therapy. I mean, whoever or whatever this intelligence is beyond impressive. Very spooky to me personally.
And it's getting so much better. It's memorizing things now that it didn't, you know, memorize in the past. So you're able to go back and ask it questions and kind of pick up where you left off in some respects. So it can really get to know you. I love the prompts that people do, like these little challenges with ChatGPT, or it can, you can do it with other LLMs too. That's ChatGPT is like the big one, but there's Perplexity, there's Gemini, there's so many different companies. But you can ask it things like, tell me something about myself that I don't know about myself. Hmm. Or tell me something that I'm capable of that I don't realize I'm capable of. And if you've had an extended relationship with your AI, then it might come back with something that really surprises you and tells you a little bit something about yourself, almost like a best friend could probably do, but your best friend's probably maybe afraid to tell you. You haven't asked your best friend, that kind of thing. It'll let you know. And I do find that, I find it refreshing.
So I'm going to ask you a very selfish question. I have a 20-year-old daughter who's a sophomore at KU, trying to decide what she wants to do. Law school is her default, but the other day on Drudge, I saw like AI replacing lawyers, question mark. So I am, as a good father, worried about her and her career choices. If it were your daughter or your niece or something, what advice would you give to a young person who really doesn't know what's going to be left?
Oh, it's so hard for young people right now. And there's a backlash too. I've heard from so many young people that don't like it at all. And I think it's because they haven't had a chance to do things for themselves yet. So what I tell everyone is approach it as a tool. You know, I have so many different hobbies and things that I do, and I don't want it to replace the things I love. I want it to replace the things I don't like doing. Dishes, laundry, that kind of thing. So when it comes to a profession, every job has like tedious, mundane work that we don't like doing. Find a way to have AI do those things for you so that you can do the part of your work that you really love. And even if AI is replacing a lot of human aspects, it's never going to replace us entirely. And people will end up paying top dollar for that human element. So you might be able to do, you know, AI, oh, AI is your lawyer now, but to have a human in the room say, hey, I've got your back, that's a different feeling. And that's something that people might even pay more for. So I would say don't be too afraid of it right now, But if the thing that you're trying to get into is going to be completely wiped out by AI and you just see that writing on the wall, then you're going to want to kind of think about what to do. I went through that in my career. My whole background for college at least was in newspapers. I thought I was going to be like a black and white photographer and I'd be behind the camera. And by the time I graduated, well, first of all, I fell in love with the TV side of things, so that kind of naturally I went in that direction. But a lot of the kids that I ended up graduating with who went the newspaper route in the kind of like mid 2000 to 2010s, newspapers were laying off staffs. A lot of them were closing. A lot of the people that I went to school with found themselves either getting laid off multiple times or without a job entirely. So these things happen, through the course of time anyway. So if you see that writing on the wall, you're going to want to build your skill set. But if there's something you're really passionate about and you love doing, then find a way to make AI that tool so it's working for you.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Lindsay Mastis. She is our new AI expert. She'll be on once a week. So if you guys want to send us questions or comments or observations on the stream or on email, we can shoot them to Lindsay. Rach, this is your opportunity.
Hey, Lindsay, it's great to talk to you. I'm wondering which one of the large language models is your favorite? Or if someone's just getting started, they've never played with a Perplexity or with a ChatGPT, what would you suggest that someone download?
Oh my gosh, you know what? Everything is so different, like for what you want to do. I've heard from a lot of people. So I don't want to say like, oh, you have to use this one because this is the one that I use. I don't want to make like a blanket recommendation. For me personally, I gravitated toward OpenAI. That's what was making headlines. And me being a news person, I gravitated toward the headlines. But a lot of people in the academic world, I've noticed, have really gravitated toward like Perplexity. For people who maybe they work for a company that is paying for the Microsoft Copilot system, that might be a better move because it can do things for like your email. It can go through your email. It can sort things out for you in a way that maybe other companies aren't able to do just yet. So I would say like test it out a little bit. If like you're interested in getting into it, test it out. Test all of them out. See which one resonates the most with you. And then also see what's going to work for you. If you want to use it like in a work setting, your employer might have some restrictions that you want to keep in mind. If you're doing it on a personal setting or for a specific maybe side hustle or a hobby, you're going to want to find something that just works for you, that you're like, hey, this makes sense to me. I feel good about it. And of course, you can do all that background research too on like, do you trust where your information's going? Because that's the big thing people tell me about. They're really worried about the information that they're putting into it. And they should be. We live in this crazy world right now where we don't know what's going to end up getting hacked down the line, that kind of thing. So I would always say, there was that saying like growing up, I don't know if the kids today still say it, but never write anything down you wouldn't want somebody to read. Never say something you wouldn't want somebody to hear. You can kind of take that approach with these AIs as well. But it's just really getting started. And if you feel comfortable and you feel good about it and it's doing something for you, then you have to go with your gut.
Kev?
Yeah, I was curious, Lindsay, when you mentioned that some of the younger people were not a fan, I'm guessing of the specific idea of jobs being taken or things, tasks being done that they don't get to do. Because I know one of the big challenges now is getting kids of a certain age to do their own work rather than leaning on AI to kind of do the bulk of it. And maybe they change it a little bit so they don't get caught. Is there a balance in that, or are they just two separate priorities?
I'd have to talk to a lot of kids to find out what's going through their minds when they have AI do the work for them when they're not supposed to. But it's probably like us. If there's something we really don't want to do to begin with, then we're going to look for that easy way out. But for a lot of kids, the things that I'm hearing from, I've interviewed some kids, but I also hear a lot from like their parents and teachers. And it's that they just haven't had a chance to do it themselves yet. It's kind of like, let me try, let me try. I don't want AI to do it for me. I'm working on a bigger story right now. It might end up being a mini documentary about, is AI ruining music? And I went to the largest music conference in the United States. It's called NAMM. And I interviewed a lot of different people about it. And there were some young people that are singers and guitarists. And they did not at all, like censor their words. They hate it. They don't want to see it replacing something that they haven't even gotten a chance to really fully do. So I can understand, you know, coming from that viewpoint, you know, when you're young and you're just kind of getting started, and it's like, you want to do everything yourself. I think about my own dad. He, you know, he's a general contractor, and he took me to an apartment that we had to paint one time. And, you know, I'm so excited to paint. It looks so fun on TV, right? I want to get that paintbrush out. I want to paint this whole room. And he's showing me how to do it. And he's using the roller brush in some places, a regular paintbrush. And I'm standing there fuming because I'm like, he's going to have this whole thing painted. I won't even get a chance to do it. Well, finally, I dipped my brush into that paint canister and my arm started to get tired immediately with every single paint stroke I did. And I'm like, actually, this is awful. And maybe it would have been good for my dad to paint most of the room because I'm exhausted now and I would rather not do this. But standing there, not having done it yet, I was so excited to try it out for myself.
That was mowing the lawn for me.
Really?
Oh, I begged my dad, please let me mow the lawn. And he was smart.
Yeah,
he made me wait a couple summers.
And he's like, okay, kid, here you go.
And like Lindsay, I'd been doing it for 30 seconds. I'm like, this blows.
Well, Lindsay, like those little vacuums they have for the little kids. They're pretending to vacuum.
The poppers.
They have them little vacuum.
Yeah. They're indoctrinating us early. Well, I can help you out, Lindsay. If you need to know why college kids are cheating, I know a little blonde girl at KU that can help you figure that one out pretty quickly. So how do people find you if they want to use you as a consultant or just consume your content?
Sure. So there's two main ways. One is my YouTube channel. That's where I'm putting up all my AI stories. In fact, if you're watching like on your Facebook page where you can actually see us, I put this QR code up. So all you have to do is scan it. You can see my name. It sounds like it's hard to pronounce or to spell, but it's very easy. It's Lindsay with an E, L-I-N-D-S-E-Y. My last name, Mastis, it's phonetic. It's M-A-S-T-I-S. Sounds hard, but it's really easy. So just Lindsay Mastis on YouTube and lindsaymastis.com. And you can find me on all the social channels with my name as well.
Excellent. Thank you, Lindsay. Welcome to the team.
Thank you.
Quick little 1 minute segment here. Wheels, how crazy is this stuff about Mookie Betts?
Man, for those that haven't seen it, man, he got sick. I believe during their trip to Japan, it might have been just before, but on the way there, right. And he got down to like 157 pounds and for weeks hasn't been able to keep anything down. It sounds like he's getting back to normal. He's supposed to play on opening day tomorrow, but that's crazy.
Right?
157 pounds.
Yeah.
That's like a freshman in high school.
I heard him interviewed yesterday. He said that when it started, he weighed 180.
Yeah.
And he now weighs 150.
Yeah.
And that he hasn't been able to eat solid food for 20 days.
Yeah. That's rough, man.
That is nuts.
Yeah, and for an athlete, man, that weight matters. And I wonder how much of a challenge it's going to be for him with the season starting to put it all back on and then keep it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.